All right, welcome to the Warriors Way. Our Warriors this week are Josh and Christy. Say good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
All right, before we get to them, if you have not gone to spiritualwarfareunit.com while you're watching the show, grab your phone, go to YouTube, hit Spiritual Warfare Unit, like, share, and subscribe. Also, if you want to check out what Josh and Christy are doing, they have joshandchristy.com, so you can check out what they're doing. We're going to, if you want to watch that during the show while we're checking it out, and you can send us some messages, see if you like or dislike that. And if you know anyone that's struggling, go to spiritualwarfareunit.com, click on struggling. And if you know someone that needs food or clothes or baby formula or help or therapy, get it there for free. And you can be the person that brought them the news that they needed to help them and help us, help you, help them. Everybody gets a win. All right. So, Josh, you are, we got to meet at church, and then he's working on Celebrate Recovery, but you have this cool show, and we're gonna talk about that last, but I want you to introduce it first. So tell everybody real quick just a summation of that.
So real quick, my wife Christy and I, we started something called the Perfectly Blended Podcast. We did that. It's actually transformed over the last couple of years, but that's where we're at now, and It's the whole focus of it is to help marriages, Christian marriages, that are into their second, third, or fourth marriage. And we've realized that there's a huge gap in the Christian community of really helping people that's been divorced and remarried.
Yeah.
The church doesn't really talk a whole lot about it.
Yeah, it's like the Christian Brady Bunch.
It is the Christian Brady Bunch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, except, you know, the church wants to love on everybody, but what we are, a blended family, it's just highly misunderstood.
Yeah.
And the church, I think, gets a little fearful of helping blended families because they don't want to think that they're helping support divorce.
Right.
And that's a real scary thing within the church.
It's, sure, but like mistakes happen and the people that make mistakes still need help.
Well, yeah, because God wants to bless what you have now.
Yeah.
I mean, mistakes are mistakes, and no, we do not condone divorce.
Well, being a perfect person, I can't relate at all. So that is a cool thing, and we're going to get into that a little bit later. That's what he's doing, but he's got a super story, him and his wife both, and they kind of mirror each other. So we're going to hear both of their stories in Josh's story. So first of all, tell everybody where you were born and where you grew up at.
Well, first off, I was born way long time ago, about the same year as you, 1975, right? Yeah. We're old people. And so I was born in Pontiac, Michigan, to be honest with you.
Which, okay.
If you know anything about Pontiac, it's not considered a wealthy city.
What?
I was born to a mom that was 17 years old. She already had a two-year-old, right? Mm-hmm. So I have a sister that's 2 years older. My mom was 15 when she was born.
Right.
We were born into poverty. My mom was married by 17 years old. Mm-hmm. And my birth father was a massive drug addict, alcoholic, ended up becoming very abusive. And my mom ended up divorcing and leaving him by the age of 19 and got with the guy that I call father or dad now.
Yeah.
And he happened to be just a little more organized alcoholic. You know? And he actually paid his bills and went to work.
Right. That matters. Functioning.
Yeah. He was high functioning. Right.
Yeah.
We ended up moving at a young age. In the early age, we moved out to Texas. My dad was in construction. And so we went out there. And unfortunately, out there, my dad got in a severe car accident and ended up in jail for a long period of time. And
all right, hold on. You just jumped. You jumped. We gotta. All right, hold on. Back up. So you're how old when your mom divorced? Three, four?
I was about 3 years old. Yeah.
Okay, and then you moved. We stayed in Pontiac. Did you move?
So we stayed in Pontiac for about another 2 years, and then we moved when I was about 5 years old.
And where'd you go then?
We went to Houston, Texas.
Houston, Texas?
Went to Houston, Texas. That's where the construction boom was in the early 80s.
Oh, okay.
That was the place.
That was the reason?
That was the reason, yeah. Yeah, okay. My parents were looking. You know, my dad was a young guy. He was in his early 20s. He really wanted to get out and, you know, find some type of a career. Now, he wasn't going to give up drinking or drugs, but he was going to work hard, you know?
Of course. You got to stay focused on things that are important.
For sure.
So, okay, so you're... I just catch up because you know the story, so I'm trying to keep everybody caught up.
Let's do it.
All right, so you're 3-4 years old now.
About five.
Five, okay. And you have an older sister that's seven.
Correct.
And both of those kids and your dad and your mom, after the divorce, are moving to Texas. Okay, so what happened then? So the integration with schools is no big deal because you're young, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So my birth father signed off rights, right? So
I don't want to pay the child support.
Yeah, I only end up seeing him one other time my whole life. You know, and that's a whole other side story. Yep. But we're in Texas and we're trying to figure it out.
So what happened? Like, did they get construction?
My dad actually ended up working hard. But yeah.
What'd your mom do?
My mom was a stay-at-home mom.
Oh, good.
And unfortunately, my dad just decided at weeks on end to never come home.
Yeah.
You know, he was a bad drug addict, alcoholic, and he would go cash his paycheck and not come home. And so my mom and I, and we were, my mom was young, 20 years old.
Yeah.
Right. And she had young children at home, no food, no money.
Yeah. Yeah.
No resources. We didn't have electricity or running water. It just got really, really, really bad.
And how long was that?
That was for about 2 years when we were down there, 2 to 3 years.
Okay. So for like 2 years, so you found some work, taking care of the family, addictions got them.
Yep.
And then after 2 years, then
sister was born.
Then I had another sister.
They had four kids.
Four. Wait a minute. We missed one because that only makes three.
Christina.
Yeah. Christina. I have three sisters.
Thank you for help filling the holes. This is what my wife does too. She's like, wait a minute. You forgot this part. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Since she brought up the kids, she gets to the kid part. Okay. So the sister was born how many after?
So his youngest sister is 13 years younger than him. And then he has another sister that's a little bit older than her. And Christina was actually born before they moved to Texas.
She was born in 81.
And then Stephanie was actually born in Texas.
Oh, so they got married, then they have a kid, then they moved to Texas.
Yeah.
So there's three kids.
Yeah.
And then another one comes later.
In Texas.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you for that information.
So he has three sisters.
This is why I brought her.
Listen, help me help you.
Yeah, right.
Thank you. And you cut in when that happens again. All right. So you're perfectly blended, right?
For sure.
So
that's exactly right.
So you're in Texas. There's four kids now. Your mom's not working?
Not working.
Wow.
She's trying to raise all these kids.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's doing it on her own. My dad was like,
and
I
this
said,
made her in her late 20s?
Not even.
Mid-20s. Wow.
Mid-20s, four kids, away from home, no family, no friends, you know?
And you're number two.
I'm number two in the lineup, yeah. I'm a middle child. I'm the most ambitious. I'm the strongest and smartest. I mean, that's what
we're doing. Wow. I think we're supposed to be like the problem solvers, the ones that get in between people, but you got the good looks charm.
Well, I don't know about that, but.
So talk about where your dad found while he was down there, though, in Texas.
Yeah, so my dad ended up getting into a lot of trouble, getting a massive car accident, ended up in jail for a while. And, well, we all know what happens in jail. We all find two things. We usually find Jesus, and we usually find sobriety, right? We got to get our stuff right because we
those
don't want to
stay here.
Those
can be two of the things that you can find.
It's typically how that works, right? Well, unfortunately, he did find sobriety, but he left the Jesus part out.
Yeah.
And so he got clean, though. But he became what I would like to call a dry drunk, right? Mm-hmm. Which is someone that just struggles each and every day just to stay sober, which put him into a position to get addicted to his
work.
So they're
taking their sobriety out on everybody else. All right.
Yeah.
So how long was he in there for?
So to be honest with you, I don't even know the time frame. I would say approximately 8 months, I think he was in jail for.
All right.
Which was a really long time.
How old were you when that happened?
So I would have been probably about 8 years old.
Okay, so what's the school scene like at this point?
I mean, to be honest with you, I jumped around so many schools. I probably had been to 10 schools.
So were you like the quick friend guy? Hey, how are you guy? Or were you the,
I was really small. I'm not a tall guy, right?
Yeah.
We know that. Right. And so, pushing 5'8" on my best days with platforms on.
Yeah.
And so as a little kid, I had no confidence. I had all sisters and a mom. I didn't have strong male influence in my life. I didn't understand what it meant to stand up for myself in a healthy way. I had no clue of that. So I just allowed everybody to bully me, pick on me. I wasn't comfortable switching schools.
These are the pieces of information that make the decisions later on, right?
Because for sure,
like you said, I understand his stories are so my people know the our stories are similar in that way. So I'm feeling that right now.
Yeah.
So all right, so you're like 8, 9, mom struggling, dad gets out, comes home, he's a struggle. Does he go back to work? Like, what happens then?
So he goes back to work. He ends up deciding to stop working for a corporation and starts working for himself, right? My dad's very intelligent. He's very ambitious.
Yeah.
He found sobriety. And when you first get into sobriety,
gotta fill that time, baby.
Yeah, you're just gangbusters on all things,
yeah.
Right? He became, we belonged to an AA house, which was wonderful, great people.
Mm-hmm.
But the AA house always needed work done. My dad was a handy guy, so he lived a lot of time there and a lot of time working. So he wasn't home very much.
Yeah.
So we didn't get to see dad that much,
Okay.
And unfortunately in that, there was no leadership at home.
Yeah.
Dad was sober and clean.
And no relationship either.
Zero
right?
relationship. Yeah. I didn't grow up with my dad playing catch with me.
Right.
I didn't grow up with none of those things.
My
dad just wasn't
working.
There. just working, right? Yeah. Just making the ends meet and and sticking to his sobriety. You know, there was no healthy balance in that. So,
how old is she? You're like 10, 11?
10, 11, then we move back.
All right, hold on, hold on. You jumping.
Yeah.
All right, so you're 10, 11. He's sober for how long before you move? Like, how long is he doing the AA work?
So he's probably for about 4 years, I'd say.
So it's a minute. So that puts you like, man, 13, 14.
I was probably about 12 when we moved back. If I'm trying to connect my timeline correctly.
All right, then it must have been 2 years.
It might have been 2 or 3 years.
It's okay. We're working this out together.
Yep.
It's gonna be fun.
Connect the dots.
All right, so he's trying to live this sober life, and trying to live sober can be, you got to deal with that anger.
It's
because
daunting.
There's the judgment that he puts on himself for the stuff he's done and trying to make up for it. And then how do I deal with this situation without it when before I used to run? So I had to deal with that with my mom. So I understand like that frustration, right? And if you're struggling with alcohol or drugs, your kids can come out all right. Like we're proof that God like helps parents help parents, right? So it's
right.
Like there's hope on this story because it's kind of bleak right now. So you're at 12. And that's it. So you're like, what's that, seventh, eighth grade?
Yeah, about that.
Man.
Seventh grade. I came back.
And how many schools do you think you'd been in at this point?
By that time, probably three or four, maybe five schools at this point.
Wow.
My dad, because owning his own business, what he would do is he got connected with a guy that was an attorney, and he owned about 300 rentals.
Mm.
So the guy allowed our family to live in the house while we worked on it for free.
Yeah.
So that helped us get past. So we were able to jump from house to house. Unfortunately, that's different school district.
Yeah, and you're never planted.
Dude, I never planted, no.
Same. And it's hard for you to like, and your family just, because there's no roots anywhere, right? Anyways.
And young people, they're kids raising kids, you know?
No, I'm just looking at the older, mine goes right down I'm a nerd. All right, so anyways, all right, so you're 12, and then why move to Michigan?
Because the economy crashed in Texas. The construction boom was over. It dried up. We were back to living no electricity, but my dad was sober this time. No electricity because there was no work.
And what year was this?
This would have been, let's see here, 88?
Okay.
Yeah, probably 88, 89.
All right, so 88, 89, there's four of you. You're the second oldest, and it's all sisters in you?
Yeah, three sisters.
Woo!
I mean,
no bathroom time for you, bud.
We always only had one bathroom, too. So.
Oh, man.
Got comfortable with the yard.
All right. Well, on that note, on the yard note, this is a perfect time to take a break. If you have not gone to Josh, now, is it Josh A-N-D Christie?
Correct.
All right. So Josh and the spelled letter word Christie.com, joshandchristie.com to check out what they're doing on Perfectly Blended. If you're not gone to YouTube, like, share, and subscribe, Spiritual Warfare Unit. We will be right back. Taking a quick break from our podcast, I wanted to let you know about our life application program that we have for churches and nonprofits in the area that are trying to find programming that they can use in case the corona shuts you down and you're not able to get in. You go to spiritualwarfareunit.com. Click on our episodes, and you can check out our programs for as little as $29.99 a month to make sure that we're still getting the word out to those people that need it. Now, back to the program. Welcome back to the Warriors Way. I'm here with Josh and Chris. You can't just throw that out. And then he was shot. All right, so we're going to get to that because I don't know what's happening right now. So, all right, so you were going bathroom outside because you had three sisters, so that's fun.
Yeah.
And I don't blame you. I think I would have gone outside,
too. Hey, you got to do what you got to do, right?
Yeah, so you're 12, 13, and you're moving back again out of another society. But now you're like in those teenage years, so it's the tough time, right? So you come back to where?
So we go back to Pontiac because we had to move back in with my mom's parents, my grandparents, and live in their basement until my dad secured a job.
Yeah.
And my dad is the most amazing worker of all time. He is committed and hardworking. He's very good at what he does. And so it only took a matter of, you know, probably about 8 to 10 months, and we were able to get back on our feet. And then we moved into Drayton Plains, which is just a little north of the Pontiac Waterford area.
Okay.
My parents bought their first house.
Okay. I was going to say that's an okay area.
Yeah. It's a nice area. Yeah. And so we were there for about 2 years. We were there for about 2 years. And then my parents really wanted to get away from that area. And they started looking into the Burton area to purchase a home,
which is northern.
Which is even more north.
All right. Before we start getting into this, did he miss anything?
No.
Okay.
Not yet.
Good job.
No, it's
buddy.
Coming up. Like, come on.
All right. All right. So now you're moving to Burton. So this puts you at 15.
About 14, 15, yep.
All right, what kind of kid are you at this point?
Extremely withdrawn. I would call myself a high-level nerd.
Okay.
Very horrible acne, large, out-styled glasses. My parents still didn't have money.
Oh, yeah.
I had no sense of style.
Those 80 rims.
Oh, buddy.
Oh, yeah.
They were like the tan, caramel.
The ones that get you punched.
Yeah. They were the free ones.
Yeah, yeah, the ones that get you punched. I know those. Yeah, those are awesome.
Yeah, zero confidence.
Yeah, none.
You know, I had none. I had
all right,
zero
so you're like trying to be the ghost in school. You
just, absolutely.
What's the grades like at this point?
Grades, you know, C's, you know, maybe okay. D's and C's.
Yeah, average.
Yeah, we'll I was average at best. I would say average at best.
Your wife's face is saying under.
He ended up graduating early. So it's, I think he's being modest.
Yeah.
Well,
cause he's intelligent,
mental.
Right? The ability to handle high stress environment and you're taught at an early age, like you've done only, high intelligence is able to compartmentalize at an early age without understanding the process.
Especially in men, compartmentalize.
Yeah, we do that well.
And that's, well, you can, yeah. Or you have to take a process to do something to deal with it, which is drugs or alcohol.
For sure.
So you chose to compartmentalize. Takes one to know one. That's on the reason I'm there.
Yeah.
And I got a 77 IQ, so that's pretty good.
Thanks.
All right, so here we go. So
she's like, get to the good stuff.
Yeah. All right, so she said that under her breath. Oh, God, I love being married so much. All right, so you're 15, and what happened?
So 15 years old, my father comes to me and says, hey, your uncles would like to know if you would like to go hunting. And I didn't have a relationship with my dad, so I'm like, I don't want to do this, but I want to do this because my dad's inviting me to do this.
Yeah, yeah.
This is some big boy stuff in my eyes, so I had to do a hunter safety thing. You know, I'm 15 years old, I get to go hunting with my uncles, my burly uncles, and my dad, and this is like a man's thing, right? So we go up north, Harrison Township, we go up north, and this was like, you know, the coming of me becoming an adult.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, this is like a fantastic thing, and so we go out to go hunt the first day. And my dad, you know, brought some walkies from work and he's like, I'm going to go here. Yeah. He was extremely safe. He's like, don't point your gun in this direction. This is where I am.
Yeah.
And the first day, yeah, it took me about 8 minutes to fall asleep and I slept until my dad woke me up. Right. I'm like, this is stupid. Who does this for fun? Right. This is a great nap.
And, the great and powerful hunter.
Right. Yeah. That was me. But so the second
that's
day,
awesome.
Second day we were going to go out. Yeah. I remember it was November 16th. And 1990,
mm-hmm.
And my dad's like, come on, we're getting ready to go. It's like 4 o'clock in the morning. And I said, nah, I think I'm going to stay here today. And he said, all right, you're going to be here all by yourself in this cabin for the next like 8-10 hours. And I'm like, okay, I'll go. And that decision though has changed my life.
Yeah. All right.
And
you pumped it up. Come on.
And about noon, my dad walkied me and said, come on, you know, we're going to go beat your uncles for lunch. And we go back to the pickup truck, single cab, long bed truck. Had one of them snap tonneau covers on it. And he said to me, he's like, let's be safe. You go to the front of the truck, rack your shells out and stick them in your backpack. I'm going to do the same. Yeah. He had a 30-06 Remington bolt action. I'll do the same. Ugh. So he takes the tailgate down. He lays the gun down and he starts to pull the bolt back. I was already done. I come back towards the back of the truck and the gun discharged. And
wait a minute.
I'm getting ghost bumps all over right now. I don't talk about this that often. So
yeah. What? Okay, hold on. Like, I'm a detail person as you're starting. So
let's go.
Like, was it like on the, it was in his hands?
It was in my father's hands, and he laid the barrel of the gun down on the edge of the tailgate for leverage, right? To pull the bolt.
Yeah.
Back. Well, the model gun that he had, from my understanding, is that you can't pull the bolt back to get your shells out without having the safety off. My dad pushed the safety off, the gun discharged. Faulty piece of equipment.
Yeah.
It discharged. I just happened to be walking around.
Yeah, no, I got it. He didn't shoot you on purpose. I get all
correct.
This.
Yeah.
I didn't do
the dishes, and that's what happens.
Yeah, no, you're trying to spend time with your dad, you get shot. That's like the world going, listen, I know, but no. That's in my mind. The karma is like,
yeah.
All right, so you get like, we get shot where?
So
30 out from 2 feet away. 30 out
six, blessing. It went through the tailgate of the truck, hit me within 2 feet. It turned into shrapnel. The unblessing of this whole thing is a major portion of it hit my femur, rolled and severed my main artery, 3 inches of it.
And you didn't die,
and
clearly.
I did. And God's grace brought me back to life. I'll get emotional talking about it.
Yeah.
I don't talk about this much.
There. Dude, I know I have a hard time talking about
it. No, I know that
too.
You do. And you've experienced death.
So like, was it like the shock? So like walk us through. So like the shock is... Bam.
The bam. It's the most incredible thing. And I know that you've experienced this, but for those that haven't,
yeah.
It's like everything was smoky, and I know that it was truly smoky because of the gunpowder, right? It wasn't in my head. Yeah. But my ears were deafening and ringing because of the gun sound.
Yeah.
But then it was like I was almost floating in spice in the moment, and I looked down, and it looked like my leg was flapping like a flag. And it's, and I realized, like, when you stub your toe really bad, what's the first thing you do? You try to walk it off.
Yeah.
And so I attempted to walk it off, and well, there was no walking it off, and I fall to the ground.
Yeah.
Right. And my dad thought somebody else did it. He had no clue.
Yeah.
He's like, somebody out here just shot my kid.
Yeah.
Had no idea. And my uncles come running up at the time, and my dad is literally trying to jerk the handle of the truck door off because it's locked. I mean, the whole truck is just rocking.
Yeah,
I'm laying on the ground. My kid's dying is what he's thinking.
Yeah, you have femoral arteries.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Well, he doesn't know this. Yeah, he just knows there's blood everywhere.
Yeah, yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so my uncles get back to the truck, and they're like, did you get a deer?
Yeah.
You know? And like my poor uncle, big, burly, 6'4", 260 pounds, passes out. Okay, this is unhelpful.
Oh, that's helping dad with sobriety.
Right.
Oh, jeez. We're talking no stress.
Right.
Wow.
And they load, and they finally get to the truck. They get me loaded up in the back. My dad's in the back of the truck.
Did they have to wake him up to get him back in the truck?
It was like a circus, I'm sure. You know,
you pulled that right out of my brain. Oh, my Lord.
Laying me in the back of the bed of the truck. We're 2.5 miles back in the woods, which took us about 30 minutes to drive.
Yeah, right.
On the way there.
And he's probably hauling.
Took us about 7 minutes to get out. My backpack comes off, grabs a tree branch, pulls me half out of the bed of the truck. Oh, it just was a show, right? They get me outside of the store.
A tree branch yanked you. You can't just skip that part.
Yeah.
You're driving, and are you sitting up? Like,
I am laying down in the back of this pickup truck, feet to the cab, head to the tailgate.
Yeah.
My cousin that is 12 years old was with us.
Okay.
He's in the bed with my dad.
Another piece of information there we didn't get.
Yep. And so they're just trying to hold me down.
Yeah.
And my backpack was still on my back.
Yeah. But how did the branch?
And a branch, well, because we're just going through it, buddy. I mean, we're going through.
Oh, so you're like in the woods.
Woods. Yeah, woods, whoop-de-doos, like the whole works.
So
right?
Just out of sheer happenstance, a tree branch at the speed and... Yep. They're trying to kill you for real.
Right. This, the enemy was trying to get me up that day. Yeah. He was like, come on. And we get outside.
He's like, come on.
We get outside the trail. Yeah. And there's a party store, and someone was on the phone. And my dad said, call 911. And they said, well, we don't have that here. So they had to call the sheriff.
Wait a minute.
Sheriff took a half hour to come
out. Who doesn't have 911?
It's 1990, buddy. I don't know. Harrison Township did.
Hey, do you guys have help? No, we don't have that here.
They had to call the sheriff. Sheriff took 20, 30 minutes to come out.
And you're just bleeding.
I'm just bleeding. My dad, which saved my life, honestly, he put his belt on me as a tourniquet.
Yeah, yeah.
He just did it. He just did it, right? And so the sheriff comes out, sits on the tailgate, and I remember this, and he was like, yeah, buddy, you're shot. You know, like, we need to get you an ambulance out here.
Ambulance.
So the ambulance comes out, takes another 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And they drive me to their local hospital, which is more like a clinic.
You're right.
And they decide to drive me to St. Mary's in Saginaw instead of fly me. First mistake. They didn't realize I was internally bleeding. Right?
Hold on. So they missed internal bleeding with a gunshot wound?
They assumed there was an exit wound.
Listen, I'm not a smart man. But gunshot and internal bleeding go together like peanut butter and jelly, right?
I'm telling you, yeah.
And you can't keep saying it was the 90s. Like, that's just not good. Yeah. So first, the gun goes off, tries to shoot you. Then a branch tries to kill you. Then the doctors are trying to kill you.
Yeah.
And you're 15?
15 years old.
Gee, this story's it's making me sweat, dude.
I'm
so into this right now.
They get me...
So how long did it take to go from...
Two and a half hours to drive, right? So about the almost two-hour mark, my heart rate starts to plummet.
Yeah,
they put these blow-up parachute-style things on, you know, for pressure.
Yeah, pressurize them.
But my heart rate started dropping anyway, which is a clear indicator. So they're like, we have nothing on board to help save this kid's life other than just pumping him full of fluid.
Yeah.
And my heart stopped. And as I'm getting to the hospital, they're jacking on my heart. They're pumping more fluids.
Yeah.
My mom meets them there from Burton. She had drove up there and getting into the elevator.
Yeah, yeah.
They look at my mom and they said, you need to talk to your son. This is going to be the last time you're ever going to speak to him.
Wow.
And they're like, we're not sure we're going to be able to bring him out of this. You know?
So you're coming down and they're like, get your moment.
She literally... found us coming into the
hospital. Do you have any mental recognition of this moment?
None of that.
Okay.
I remember being into the clinic originally, you know, the hospital lights.
Do you remember
like,
getting there?
That's a real thing. I remember getting there. I remember the drive there, to be honest with you. No but kidding. Up until the hospital, until my heart started really plummeting, I was out by then.
Okay.
I was gone. They kept telling me, like, don't go to sleep.
And you're like, yeah.
The lady's like, squeeze my hand. And then she's like, not that hard, you know? And it's like, you know, this whole thing. But they get me upstairs. They get me in surgery. And they come out and tell my parents. They said, look, he has a severed main artery.
Yeah.
We can save his life, but we need permission to remove his leg. He lost blood too much to the bottom portion of his leg. We're going to have to amputate it. And of course, they're like, do what you have to do.
Yeah.
Another 4 or 5 hours, they come out and they said, look, we were able to pair it. We did what they call a fasciotomy, which means they sliced me from kneecap to ankle on both sides to allow pressure to continue.
Yeah.
We're going to give him 30 days with his leg wide open to see if pressure comes down. If pressure doesn't come down, we then have to amputate.
Wow.
Of course, they don't tell a 15-year-old that.
No, of course not. They say, we're just going to continue watching. Yeah. You're doing great.
Yeah, but I had to have my leg wide open with muscles everywhere.
Dude, how long from the time that like the surgeries happened to you were like cognizant of like the seriousness of what's happening?
So 6 days. I was completely gone and out for 6 days. And the first memory that I have, they were trying to sit me up. That's a major important thing, which you would know.
And you would be...
They're like, you need to get up. I had more wires and tubes in me than you can imagine.
Yeah.
And the first thing I remember is they said, you need to look at your leg. This is an important step. Like, you got to get the shock over with. And then I was gone for another 2 days.
Hold on a minute. You just keep skipping this stuff. The doctor was like, this is going to be so bad. We need to get it out of the way.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you need
you got to get used to this.
You got to process this. For a month. It's like, oh, yeah, doctors are here to help. So listen, we did such a horrible job. That we need to prepare you for what you're about to see, right?
Yeah.
And so you look, and what is that?
It's my leg. I had enough skin to cover about that much on my shin and about that much on the back part. All of it was swollen out about this big, and it was just all bare muscle. And it's because it was swelling.
Yeah, yeah. Right?
And they had to do that so my heart wouldn't implode. So they had to relieve the pressure.
So your legs are huge.
My one leg, yeah. The one I got shot in, yeah.
Okay. So what is your response to this? Were you just like, yeah, whatever?
No, I passed out right, of pure shock.
So you and your uncle have things in common. No,
yeah, for sure.
The shock of it. Dude, yeah. I don't think there's I think that's a proper response. I think I would have just passed right out too. Because what do you do?
I was 15. I didn't know how to. I didn't know how to comprehend what was going on.
Were your parents there when that happened? Did you handle that one on your own?
No, there was. It was full. Oh, like we had probably 6 or 7 people in the room. I remember it.
Yeah.
Because
do you remember their response?
I don't.
Like I will remember other people looking at it and going, I should probably be mad right now. They look pissed. You know?
Yeah. Wow. I don't remember ICU other than that moment. And then I only remember when I got moved out of ICU into a regular room.
So the pain is reconnecting the memory.
Yeah. So it's you know, once you get in there, now you're in the hospital for, you know, I'm in there for 30 days. And the goal is to, you know, the swelling to come down and then basically do a grafting on my leg and sew me up. That's the goal.
So this is a perfect time to take a break. Man, he's getting ready to get moved out of ICU. If you've not gone to joshandchristy.com, please go down and check out what they're doing. Like, share, and subscribe. Hit Spiritual Warfare Unit. We will be right back.
I'm really impressed with the teachings that Isaac has been bringing to us, as this is all based from Proverbs.
I like it because it's simple, and it doesn't matter who you are. It's very easy to understand and apply to your life.
You know, it points out, you know, my bad parts, and you know, but it's showing me how to do the good parts. And, you know, I'm trying to apply that and, you know, make a better life for myself because I'm tired of where I've been.
It's impacted a lot of the guys as they continue to talk and ask questions after the meetings as they speak to one another regarding the meeting and the messages and the topics that are being brought up, which are down-to-earth topics of situations and things that we live with on a day-to-day basis.
He takes the Bible and he breaks it down into simple terms and where you can understand. And like I said before, a lot of churches, even the Salvation Army sometimes, we start using these big words that people don't understand. Like even saying someone got saved. Well, what does that mean? What does it mean when you say someone got saved? And it's accepting Jesus into your heart. So it's like words like that we use that people don't understand.
It's just very interesting how he points out, you know, the different things of, you know, the sin part. And then he comes back with the, you know, how to make it better. And it's just, he just points it out. It's there. You know, I didn't know all this stuff was in there, but now that he's pointing it out, it's like, wow, you know, I guess if you really dig into the Bible, you find these things.
This is a daily moral standards that we can live by that the teachings are coming from. And honestly, we can take verse by verse as what he's done, and pretty much he's done the hard work for us and now laying it out so that we have an easier understanding.
There are some people who don't like to be in Bible classes, but this one seems to get their attention.
From Perfectly Blended, and we were just getting out of the ICU story. I need a break because this is stressing me out. And so our third section is what we call our gem sessions, where we ask for some funny stories. So before we get back into this, I wanted to, any funny stories that you want people to know that you went through or situations that you had? What do you got?
Well, so, I mean, there is actually a funny story that is something that Christy and I feel comfortable sharing with people now.
All right.
Okay, so.
Now, that's good.
Well, it's, you know, you get humbled by life.
Yeah.
You know, and as a guy, you know, it's easy to get stuck in pride.
Yep.
And, you know, feel like, you know, that's not the way things happen. And it's just not true, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, Christy and I, you know, which is part of our story, you know, Christy is 11 years sober, I'm 13 years sober. Mm-hmm. And when we first started dating, Christy and I, Christy was still actively drinking, and I was about a year and a half sober.
Yeah.
And eventually it led into, you know, we got involved in church and we got, you know, found Jesus Christ at the center of my life. You know, Christy comes from church. I did not. And, you know, so a lot of these things. But the funny portion, the ironic portion of this whole story is that when we, Christy brought it up years ago, and it's true. It says that, you know, Josh showed me to sobriety, but I showed him to Jesus. And I know that story isn't as funny, but it's ironical because to me, it sounds like I showed her sobriety. I'm the one that probably did the most work, and it's not, though. You know, it's
no,
like,
she's like, listen, you helped me get sober, but I showed you God.
So. Yeah.
There we go. We're dropping the mic. In case you didn't know, he's like the guy.
Yeah, he's like the man. Right.
That's actually really, really funny. I actually like that as a funny joke because that competition between husbands and wives, it's always there that you don't talk
about. It's always
there. But it's really there.
It's there. And I've learned to embrace that over the years.
And I love the fact that you're sitting here and she's like, actually, you miss it. Dude, it's like my wife sitting here with me.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I love that part. I actually love that part about being married because after a while, they're like, did I miss anything? And that's where the appreciation and it comes in. And so, me and my wife talking about it, like going through our car accident and all that, I would forget. Now, mind you, I didn't know I was forgetting, but I was forgetting. And so one day, this is when I knew I had to really listen to my wife. This is a true story. Whew, all right. I'm going to say this out loud. All right. So I'm forgetting a bunch of things all the time. So my wife starts putting sticky notes everywhere, right? So one day, it's middle of winter, and I'm getting ready to go do ministry, and I get in the car, and I'm warming the car up. I'm like, man, these seats are freaking hot today, man. I was like, man, what's going on? And I go to hit reverse, and as I do, I look down, and I didn't have any pants on, right? I was like, oh, no, right? So put it in park, go in. I'm like, who forgets their pants? Like, how is that a problem in everyday life, right? And so my wife puts a sticky note on the door, phone, wallet, keys, pants, smiley face. And I was like, only in our relationship do you have to have a sticky note that says, don't forget to wear your pants.
That's great.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's so funny. That's a true story. So I can feel you on that one. And he got you first, but you got him back. So technically you won. Right?
So quickly, there's the very first time I ever spoke on stage at Celebrate Recovering, I was doing the story. I was telling the story about how Jesus tells the guy to pick up his mat when he's down by the water and he's in Bethesda. And the whole time I kept saying the invalid instead of the invalid. And I said it the whole time. And God bless everybody's heart. Nobody told me I was saying it wrong, which is beautiful, until a long time after my beautiful wife, probably a year later, was like, it's not an invalid. It's an invalid.
Nice.
And I'm like, that is so embarrassing.
Yeah. Like
the first time ever on stage.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, dude.
You know?
Oh, dude. The fact that you get up there is like the dub.
For sure.
Yeah.
It's this. And it was so, I remember it now.
Like to this day, you're about to laugh about this, but to this day, I say Simonin, but it's supposed to be Simonin. But in my mind, it sounds different, but my mouth is saying it the same way. But I'm saying Simonin and not Simonin, and it's the same, right?
Yeah, it's the same.
But in here, it's not the same. I'm saying Simonin and not Simonin, but I'm saying Simonin, right? Yeah. So
that's great.
Yeah. Anyways, whew, I needed that break. All right. So that's super funny. Wife gets a win because she brought Jesus. That's super funny. Yeah. All right. So you're 15, passed out, got shot, just getting out of the ICU at 15. Mm-hmm. After 30 days, the prognosis with your leg was?
They shaved my thigh to do a graft. They
Wait
were
a minute.
Assuming.
What does that mean, shave?
So they had
like
to.
Your skin?
The skin. They had to shave the skin because they were going to remove a large patch of skin from my right thigh to patch the gap on my left calf muscle area because it still wasn't.
Oh, smaller. They're using the skin from that side.
Correct,
for the other
to graft.
So they actually, they skin your skin.
They literally peel your skin off. And then apply it to each side to connect the dots. So this is what they're taking me. This is what they do for burn victims, right? So they're taking me in there. First off, the notion is they're going to amputate my leg if they can't get it back sewn up. That's
right.
But they don't tell me this.
No, of course not.
So
want to keep your hopes up.
This is where God has just been so amazing in this whole thing. Right? Yeah. So I come out. They didn't have to graft me. They were able to, staple it.
Wait
up,
a minute.
Get
how?
Right. Exactly.
So it
they were
the
able
swelling
to,
went down enough that enough they were able to put it together.
To be able to pull the skin close enough and tight enough to be able to staple it.
Wow. And how
if
many
I can
days
show you my
that?
Leg, I have massive, 16-inch scars on each side of my leg.
I feel like my little 12-inch one's a wuss, man. So, how long was the process? So 30 days in ICU, and then how much longer till all that?
So I was in the hospital for a total of 6 weeks total.
God.
Right? So then they get me out. They tell me when I'm leaving. They said there's two things that will never never be able to happen with you in life. Number one, you'll never be able to have kids because of the amount of trauma that happened where you got shot.
Yeah.
I got shot in the hip.
Yeah.
Right? And they said, number two, you'll never walk right. You're always going to have a permanent gimp.
Yeah.
Like it's always going to be this way.
What do they know, right?
Well, they apparently don't know because God is much bigger than the things that go on with us. And so I at 15 years old wasn't, God had brought me to a new level of confidence in what is possible.
Yeah.
And because of that.
You didn't know it at the time. Though.
I didn't know it at the time.
Okay.
And so.
I was going to say, she brought Jesus. So.
Yes. I just didn't know it.
I was keeping that there.
That's the beautiful thing about Jesus, right? Yeah. We don't have to believe in him for him to
for
believe
him
in
to
us.
Work with us.
That's right. So, I decided to get involved in cross country and track, and my parents told me that was horrible. You can't do this.
Yeah,
you did not hear what the doctor said.
You didn't want to hear it.
End up setting a school record running, and which has been shattered since.
In
of
what?
Course. I did it in cross country, and I did it in the quarter mile relay.
Man, that's so awesome!
Yeah, so I ended up being a fast bugger.
It was a hold my Coke moment.
It was. it was establishing a moment in my life of saying, "Don't allow what other people tell you what you can
to dictate
can't do.
Your ability."
Amen.
Absolutely.
And so now, like I said, that record was little and small. Went to a Class C school. It was nothing.
Doesn't
big.
Matter. Dude.
I wasn't going to college on these runs.
None of those people got shot in the hip, bro.
That's what I'm saying. Right. Touche.
That's right.
Touche. So
don't hold it back there. We got to get this.
So
guy
I mean, the record's been shattered since, but it gave me a new level of confidence. Unfortunately, I didn't know how to handle this level of confidence. This confidence led me in a very long, wrong direction.
Yeah.
Right? I was bullied for a long time. I didn't know who I was.
So then
I had
you became
no identity. Then I found alcohol, and alcohol showed me that I could be all these things if I used it.
How old were you when that happened?
I was 19 years old, believe it or not.
Wow.
I found the gym and I found the bottle.
Yeah. Wow.
Because of those things,
yeah.
It gave me a new false level of confidence, making me think that alcohol
what was
what was
given
to me.
Do you remember the first time? Like, because you're talking
absolutely.
About alcohol like it's a personality.
No, absolutely. So I remember my very first time ever drinking a beer ever is my senior year in high school. And I went to our girls volleyball team were amazing. They always won state finals.
Yeah.
So it was in the finals were in Kalamazoo that year. And I went and hung out with some buddies and we were going to stay the night in a hotel. Well, half our school did. And I got a bunch of buddies, paintball guns got real popular then, but they would freeze them in the freezer.
Yeah.
And then shoot people,
you don't
which
leave
is
a mark.
Breaking sternums on people, right?
Yeah.
So it was really bad. Well, the cops showed up and we're on a second balcony of this hotel.
You did not shoot.
And I just, I did not. So I didn't shoot anybody, right? I didn't, I was the guy that just was the tag along, right?
Yeah.
I was just that guy. And so, but nonetheless, the cops were chasing us and we had to jump off the second story
Uh-oh.
Of a hotel balcony, which I shattered my heel.
Yeah.
But I get in the driveway car.
Wait, you shattered your heel on the jump?
I did. Yeah, I ended up shattering my heel.
Dude!
Yeah, I know. I'm a hot mess. I know. But I get in the car, and the first thing they do is, you want a beer? Do you want a beer? And I'm like, I'm part of the cool kids now.
Oh, yeah.
Do I want a beer? The most popular kid in school is asking me if I want a beer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want a beer.
Yeah.
And it was just there forever out. I mean,
how long did it take to fix your heel, for crying out loud?
Oh man, it took probably 2 years. Like, it was dramatic. Luckily, it was at the end of my senior year.
Yeah, no, I get it.
So it was post, you know, running stuff. And so, yeah, it was
I
bad.
Get it, but geez.
It was a mess.
Yeah, you think.
Yeah.
Wow, so you just broken all over the place. Jeez. Maybe we get through one story that breaks it like the, and these are all like major injuries. It's not like I skinned my knee. No, I shattered this. I was shot by a 30-06. Good God.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. So you're 19, you start drinking, and then... Yep. That party life just...
Oh, it's completely just escalated like nobody's business.
Now, were you functioning like your dad? Like, were
I
you
was functioning like my dad. Yeah, it was very good. I was actually working for Sears at the time in the electronic division. Mm-hmm. And I found out I was actually a pretty good salesperson. I didn't even know what commission was. And got my first paycheck. And I'm like, well, these people like me. And they're like, no, that's commission. You get all this money for selling all this stuff. I'm like, huh? Well, I'll sell more stuff, make more money. So, you know, I'm like, I need to make money. I need to drive fancy cars and live in fancy houses drink more alcohol. And I need to look better and smarter. And and alcohol, I felt, delivered all that to me. And so I chased it and chased it.
So what was it about the alcohol that made you feel like you couldn't do it without it? Like,
It's because I lived a whole life without alcohol. And these things didn't start happening until alcohol.
But really, I think it was the confidence in coming back with something, and then you attach those.
That's exactly
things.
Right. I connected those dots together in my mind.
Because like over manager at 15 to get there to do that. Like, and then you like, well, no, I'm going to run. I'm going to do it. I have another friend of mine that had an injury like that. And before we finish up the story, we got to take another break. We're going to hit the break. I don't even want to go to break right now. It's such a good story. But if you've not gone to joshandchrissy.com at this point, you're not listening, pay attention, check it out. Blended Family, you're going to like it. SpiritualWarfareUnit.com. We will be right back.
You can just out here today at the Valley Area Agency on Aging event, Senior Power Day. It's been really cool. We haven't been in the senior world very long, and I know it always plays a part in our world. So we're here today to connect with that senior community and kind of talk about the proper use, misuse, storage, and disposal of medications, making sure that they're not only are they using them as prescribed, but also disposing them as needed. So we're also bringing a multitude of services here that I'm looking at that allow us to connect and expand on our senior care initiative. So it was twofold. Share some information with the seniors that were out here, but also make some connection with those who are servicing the senior community to be able to expand our network of our senior initiative and make some connectivity. So we've met the folks from Valley Area Agency on Aging specifically, have some cool ideas already to work with them. We'll talk to McLaren and Genesee Health Plan as far as the Medicaid sign-ups and things like that. Veterans are here. The Genesee County Services for Veterans is here. So really have some great connectivity going. Good start to our senior care. A great day here. There's a lot of people here. There's been probably 200 to 300 people here. We've been here since 9, so it's been a rewarding event. Most people do look at our table and say addiction and don't look, but there has been those handful that do come over to us and say specifically, hey, can you come to this event or can you come speak to us here or there? And that's kind of what we're after. We're really after the focus on how we can continually expand our reach into this community. So it's been a good day. We look forward to continuing the rest of the day, and we'll circle back again another time. Thanks again.
All right, welcome back. We're here with Josh and Christy from Perfectly Blended, joshandchristy.com, and we were just getting into your, so you just shattered another bone, and you were getting in with the cool kids and partying, so you did all that for how long, the party scene, how long was that?
Party scene lasted from about the age of 19 to about the age of 33.
19 to 33, okay, And then what was the marker of I'm done with this?
So divorce, ending in jail, drunk driving, losing jobs, crashing, almost losing my kids.
You know, it sounds exactly like your dad's story, right?
It's very similar to my dad's story. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
All right, so that happens, and then you go through that cycle, the same thing your dad did, and then what?
At 33, I'm like, this is either going to take me to my grave or I need to do something about it. And so I really felt like, I really felt like God whispered to me, you know, and said, you know, you need to lean into me. You need to focus on what I'm trying to offer you. I'm trying
to
offer
you an opportunity.
I have not. Right.
So how do you know God? Wait
a minute. I was raised in knowing who God was, but never following God. And so you can know who God is, but not be a follower of Jesus.
Would you consider that like a higher being thing? A higher power?
No, I think it's a life commitment. Right? Okay. So we can say, like,
I was just wondering why you were just overall, you're like, okay, God, I'm.
He didn't originally say it was God. I think now, later, in his
I feel
life,
like it was God.
He looking oh, okay. back.
Yeah.
All right.
He feels like it was
so
God.
So God was working, you just didn't know it was him.
Sure.
Okay. Thank you for the clarity. Yeah, I you. Was confused, thank and you. That's where.
Yeah.
Thank you for helping me.
So right. I so decided to get sober, right? Called my dad. My dad took me to AA. I got sober in AA. By this time, about a year and a half in, Christy and I met. You know, we kind of went through it. She decided to get sober. We're going through sobriety together. She's like, we need to get connected to a church.
How long was it since when, from the time you met that you stopped drinking to get sober?
Her? Yeah. She, like 6 months?
No. I stopped drinking in March. So March 30th, and we had been dating since like New Year's Eve of that year.
So it's 3 months.
Quick. So 3 months. Wow. Yeah,
she really quick. Liked you, bro.
But our story is weird because I had actually met him when I was 18. I was dating his best friend. And this is when he was the Next old Josh. And so
Party
now
she didn't like me.
Yeah. I didn't like him back then.
Yeah. You know what? My she wife is proof that I got people skills. She didn't like me either. All right.
So we came back together. Our paths crossed
So
again.
This is where you guys meet. And then he led you to sobriety and you're like, no, it's really Jesus.
Yeah.
And then how long was that before you like got married? Like how long was that process?
We started dating in the very beginning, New Year's Eve of 2010. So technically 2011. And we got married in 2013.
So 2 years.
She dated 2 years. Oh, mm-hmm. So it wasn't like a snap decision. Oh,
no, we lived in
San There's
for
some
a
good
years.
News. Who you guys sold stories about guns and shooting and all dying. There's yeah. some good decisions. All right. So writing produces some good decisions. All right, cool. So from the time they get in, so you're 33 to 35. Mm-hmm. That puts you at 22, 23.
That's great.
Yeah, I'm married. And so good for you, Josh. And
lucky me.
So yeah, we're sitting here, and you decide that the sobriety world and God needs to be connected.
Amen.
And so you decided to do what?
So Christy and I talked, and we thought that it was time for us to do something with our sobriety. So I met with our lead pastor, John Scally, which I know he's been on here before. And
nobody really likes him, though. Just,
you know. Yeah, he's not right. Taste in colleges. Yeah, but that's all
right. His hair is unbelievable.
Yeah. So you know, he said, yeah, you know, he said to me, he said, yeah, you know, one of my 5-year plan of coming to this church is to have a recovery program, yep. and I trust in you, you know, which was super honoring and humbling to me.
Yeah.
And so Christy and I really dug in, and we found Celebrate Recovery. And so it's been 5.5 years, and we've been.
All right, so you can't just say you found something. Like, what is it? What is it, that one? Like, there's a million of them. Why that
There
one?
Is a million of them, yeah. So I really felt connected well with it. There were some certain things that I really liked. I read that the past history story of how CR was founded.
Okay.
And the co-founder of it actually was part of AA, so I resonated with that a little bit.
Okay.
And then he realized, you know, there needs to be Jesus in AA, because originally that's where AA was founded.
Okay.
It was on the principles of the Bible, you know, the 8 Beatitudes. And so I really just resonated well with that. They have women go to one group, men go to another group.
Yeah.
I resonate well with that. I think there's a lot of value in that.
Yeah.
I have been part of AA with mixed, and it's unhealthy. And so so there's a lot of that, you know.
So how long was the process from the time that you were sober and you decided to put these two together to the CR? How long was that?
So
you were 35.
Long time. I mean, so I was sober at 33.
Yeah.
And we didn't start CR until I was 41.
Okay.
So I sat on my sobriety a long time.
So during that time, it's just building the relationship and the kids, because your perfectly blended thing is about divorced people and families. Okay, so you're doing the Celebrate Recovery thing because you're passionate about bringing those two subjects together. And then, because you didn't have enough to do, you decided that you were going to do this perfectly blended thing. Now, we talked about at the beginning that it is having families that were divorced that came together and how they function with the church, right?
Correct.
Okay. How did that – what spawned that idea?
Well, you know? Without making it a long story, because
– we don't have enough time.
Right.
You
so
kind of
– yeah, we'll snippet this bad boy. So we always knew that we want to do something together. And we hired a business coach. And a business coach we hired because we wanted to go out and start doing leadership training for corporations. My wife is an executive level leader, and with our passion to help people, we wanted to combine those. The coach says, I know you hired me for this, but I don't think this is really what you guys are called to do. This is, you hired me for my perspective. This is what I think you guys should do. Your marriage does not make sense. You guys both come from broken backgrounds, addiction, your merit. You guys should not have the strength in marriage that you do. And you guys should really look into that. We prayed about it. We looked into it. Hold and on. Now we have a massive passion.
Hold on a minute. You hired someone to help you with something. And then they said, what you have is working and it shouldn't be working. You should do that.
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah.
What are the chances of that?
Which is a blessing.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, listen, your idea, no.
Yeah.
You're paying me.
And we were mad.
Yeah, no kidding.
We were mad about it.
You're like, listen, I paid you and you're going to tell me that I'm good at having a relationship.
Yeah.
And so what are you thinking at this point? That's got to be a rocker.
I was the most mad at first because I am passionate. But what I realized that I'm passionate about is people taking personal responsibility for their growth. So originally when we started our podcast, it was because we felt like there was a gap in the Christian community with people that have had second marriages, people that have come to God and become Christ followers later on in life.
Yeah.
And so we originally started the podcast to reach anyone that felt far away from God, even in the church community.
Yeah.
And that has morphed through God.
Yeah, yeah.
Over time, you know, we make our plans, God directs our steps.
Yep.
Right? So that was our plan. And we've just allowed God to change it, sometimes kicking and screaming, but eventually being obedient to what we feel he's trying to do through us.
So how long was that process from the time that you talked to the life coach person and hired you?
We had been doing our podcast for about a year.
Before we hired her.
Right.
And then she is the one that said, you guys really should look into marriage coaching.
Marriage coaching. So technically it's in that. Now, are you on any of the podcast sites like people can go to?
Yeah, we're all over the place. Yeah. So you can go anywhere audio is found, but we're also on YouTube and Facebook.
Okay.
So any audio podcast platform.
Like, give me an example.
We're on Apple, we're on Spotify, we're on Google Podcasts.
Okay.
Any audio podcast you can be found, but we're also on YouTube. And we're also, because it's a video podcast, but we transcribe into audio as well.
Right. So you have a podcast on marriage coaching for people who may struggle in the church environment.
With blended families.
All right, give me an example, just a quick example of what you're talking about so people know what you mean.
Sure. So if you have two families that come together, right? It's been divorced, they come together, they have kids, right? Say Jack has two kids, 10 and 7, and Mary has two kids, 12 and 14. Mm-hmm. There is nuclear families that don't understand what it takes for those two families to come together. Mm-hmm. Their little kids may only come to church 50% of the time. People don't understand why. Because they're only with dad 50% of the time.
Right.
The other kids, though, they get to come 100% of the time because they're with mom 100% of the time. Yeah. So there's a lot of parenting things that need to be adjusted and changed because people like us, we're not hand raisers in church. Last thing I want to do is say, hey, I'm a blended family and I'm struggling. Like, we don't do that. We suffer in silence because we're the ones that got divorced. This is what we have to live with.
Well, and if you look at a lot of churches, even our church, there isn't even hardly a marriage program. So you take marriage is even forgotten a lot in the church community. Just think how much less a blended marriage is thought about.
Yeah, and then how people perceive that and who you are. And the
you can't be a leader in certain churches if you've been divorced.
The stigma of all that.
Yep. Yeah, lots of stigma. I mean, you're talking about dealing
with... The scarlet A.
Yeah?
No, I...
Dealing with exes? I mean, that's a hard thing.
Yeah.
I mean...
She's like... Yes.
Yeah. Oh, we have been through it. And it's like, why aren't you bringing your kids to church? You know, you're on staff, Josh. I'm like, it's not that I don't want to bring my kids to church. You don't understand what my parent, their mom is telling them that this is a cult.
You're
so
right.
It's a struggle. You know?
It's not a cult.
It's I hope not.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. But if you go to a movies, I'm going to give you demerits. So.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. No. It's because the whole idea of everything that you guys have put together, like, it takes a super strong personality to get there, and then it takes a super strong personality to put up with that super strong personality, right? And I know that because, like, my wife's extremely intelligent, very similar to your wife. Very. It's so stupid how close it is. And I'm just laughing about the process. And when all the things that you guys have gone through to get to this point, to be focused on something that a lot of people don't think about. And what I mean by that is if I was to ask you how many people
think about talking with other people about how to deal with their relationship with their wife. That list is super small, and you normally do it individually with your friends, separate from your wife, right?
Yeah.
But to do that from a position of here's our experience and our experience gives you this, that's actually super brilliant, right? Is there any like techniques or things that you guys use that you're really fond of, you want to kind of let people know when they're going through your website, take a look at?
Yeah, so we do something called, we came up with a formula that's worked for us over the years. It's five things. We call it the blend framework, B-L-E-N-D. It's super simple. And each letter stands for something that's really an iconic thing that you need to do in your relationship to have forward motion.
Okay.
You know, so if they want to look it up on our website, they're welcome to go there. It's too much to probably get into right now.
Yeah.
But the blend framework is something that's super, super important because it walks you through step by step on the important things to do within your relationship to find some type of victory. But ultimately, personal responsibility is the key to all change, no matter what type of relationship that you have. And that's why our recovery has been such a paramount thing to all of this.
And you figure those two things are connected, of course. Yeah.
Highly connected.
Yeah. Unbelievably
connected.
As my great and powerful Oz would say, unbelievable.
Yeah.
So the last thing I wanted to get to is during that process that we kind of jumped through from 19 to 30, 38, there's always moments that come in where a decision process is being made, where the stress has come upon you of the realization of the situation. So you're 33. So you made a decision then to be sober, right? But like, why God? Why wasn't the sobriety enough? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, it's very simple for me, is because I didn't want to live each day just being sober. I wanted to live life with purpose. Mm-hmm. And you can't live life with purpose without having a relationship with the one that made you. And that's just simply that true. It's no matter what. We have a God-sized hole in our heart, and we're constantly trying to fill it with even healthy stuff.
Yeah.
Going to the gym, you know, reading good books. We don't try, but without the relationship, we don't really truly find what we're supposed to be doing here on this planet. And just not drinking every day wasn't something I was interested in doing. I watched somebody do that.
And that wasn't enough purpose.
That isn't purpose.
Yeah, one of the things I've always tried to tell people, and one of the great things about having a brain injury and being told you're going to die young, is that what am I doing with today, right? Amen. Each day has to matter because I can't waste it, because, like, I got in the habit of this 5-6 years ago where it was like I'd chest tightens up for no reason. You're like, uh-oh, you know, this could be the one.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, Lord, you gave me today. Thank you, because you didn't have to do that. Like, you didn't have to let me come back. You didn't have to let me be functional. He didn't have to let me be able to do things. Oh, that, those were options were off the table. Like, that was a, it's never going to happen, Mr. Walsh. Thank you. Like, I had the number one surgeon in the United States walk in. I was 33. Again, it's amazing how weird this is. And he was like, I'm sorry, your life is over, Mr. Walsh. He turned around and walked out. He was the number one surgeon in the United States, and I was just like, I didn't know what to do with that. And so it took my purpose, my reason, you know, cars and things and stuff. It just doesn't freaking matter anymore, because at the end of the day, what are you leaving? Let's say I collected all these things. What? Who cares? Now what? Yeah. I got stuff. Now what? You want my stuff when I die? So you're just hanging out with me? So you're waiting for me to die so you can have my stuff? That's awesome. Yeah. There's no value to that whatsoever. So when you guys do the blended family thing and do the celebrate recovery thing, you're investing in the most important thing that we have on this planet, and that's people, from the perspective of letting them understand that the reason why, this is my interpretation of what you're doing, the reason why they're doing what they're doing is they have an individual purpose, because God created them at this time, and you're in a functional position to give them help. God has put you in that position, and that gives you the purpose. They are the reason why you're here, and in return, they get to do that for it. Is that close?
Amen.
And moving that forward, trying to explain that to somebody who doesn't get it. But the easiest way I've done it, I was like, you know the difference between a man and Iron Man was that power source.
Yeah.
That's the difference.
Yeah.
Like, I swear to you. And I'm like, you just get that part. And then it's like, you know how it is.
Yeah.
And you get in there and you invalid. And like, for me, it's you couldn't say you're invalid.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And for me, it's Arnold Palmer, whatever that is.
Yeah.
I don't do that. And so I just stay. That's when sometimes you'll see me go, oh, and I'm rethinking, how do I get around that sound so I can sound normal. But I wanted you guys to meet these guys because they're great human beings, and they're doing all this because they just want God to get a W, and they want to help people. There's nothing else to it. They're not trying to make a buck. But if you want to support what they're doing, go and check out their website, joshandchrissy.com. You guys, thank you so much for coming on here.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, we're going to be adding them to our struggling program, and they're going to be adding our stuff. So if you're hitting the CR thing, that's just going to be a symbiotic relationship there, and we're going to help you out. Thank you so much for coming on. If you're not going to Spiritual Warfare Unit, your time is up. You'll have to hit us next time, and we will see you next week.
You have a nonprofit in your area that's doing a lot of work that people should know about? Feel free to contact Spiritual Warfare Unit at 810-715-9319, and we would love to have them on to see what good they're doing in the community and find out their story. Thank you so much.